This week's Torah portion is a double header, Pukas and Bullock. Also, this Shabbos is the 12th day of the month of Tammuz, and Sunday is the 13th of Tammuz. The 12th and 13th of Tammuz, the 12th of Tammuz is the birthday of the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, and it also is called, in Hebrew, Chag HaGeula, the festival of liberation of the previous Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Schneerson, of blessed memory. This is the Rebbe's father-in-law. He was born in 1880. He passed away in 1950, the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe. And he was arrested by the Soviets in 1927. At that time, they were purging all of the religious teachers and leaders of all the religions. And they pretty much didn't discriminate. But the Jews had a special section that they were that the Soviets had established to get rid of Yiddishkeit, unfortunately. And they arrested the Rebbe in 1927. You could look up the stories all online. Very long stories, a whole book that was written by the Rebbe himself. He was an amazing writer, very descriptive. And talks about how he was arrested and how he was interrogated, and he was literally on capital charges. Like many people, they just take him to the basement and just, God forbid, shoot them. But the Rebbe was let free on the 12th of Tammuz, eventually. It was a two-stage process. On the third day of the month of Tammuz, he was let free from prison. He was sent away to Siberia. He was supposed to be there for 10 years, and instead, 10 days later, he was let free, and he was kicked out of the country, which was an amazing, amazing miracle, and it was due to a lot of international pressure. The Americans had put a lot of pressure, and the whole story is online, but that's the 12th of Tammuz, so it's considered to be a holiday, a Yom Tov. The Rebbe himself said that it should be celebrated as a big Yom Tov, and that's this Shabbos tonight, Shabbos and Sunday. Why is it 2 days? Because he was actually let free on the 12th, but it seems there was some kind of a legal holiday in Russia at the time, and he was not able to be given his papers until the next day to be actually let free. So that's the time of the year. Of course, from that, we move to the 17th of Tammuz, which is this coming Thursday. And this coming Thursday, the 17th of Tammuz, begins a very sad period in Jewish history when the temple, the first and second Beis HaMikdash, were both destroyed during this three-week period. The 17th of Tammuz is the first Beis HaMikdash, according to many opinions, also the second temple. The walls around Jerusalem in both cases were breached by the Babylonian army, 500 some odd years later, by the Roman army. We're talking about 2,500 years ago and almost 2,000 years ago. The Jews, of course, were massacred, murdered in the streets through in both of those cases. And eventually on the 9th of Av, Tisha B'Av, which is 3 weeks from this Thursday, on the 9th of Av, both temples on the same day were destroyed. And that's a lot to talk about, that history. But that is a sad part of Jewish history that will be starting on Thursday, unfortunately. And hopefully by that time, Mashiach will be here. Mashiach comes, we will not be fasting. It's a fast day, a daytime fast day, 12-hour fast day, roughly, Thursday. Instead, we'll be celebrating. Why we'll be celebrating? Because we'll realize what is the reason for all of the suffering that we have gone through. The Gemara tells us that it will be changed into days of feasting. So until that time, we have plenty of time for Mashiach to come. And Erev Shabbos is a good time now, the 12th of Tammuz, for Mashiach to come in preparation for the 12th of Tammuz, even though the Gemara says that Mashiach is not going to come on Erev Shabbos because people are so busy preparing for Shabbos. The Rebbe many times quoted this Gemara and said, let Mashiach come, and then Eliyahu Navi will answer that question also. So all the questions will be answered when Mashiach comes. So let's talk about this week's doubleheader, Parsha, Chukas and Bullock. You may have seen from the chat what it's talking about roughly, you may be familiar, so I'll just tell you overview, what is Chukas Balak talking about. And I will tell you also overview that Chukas Balak has incredible messages about, number one, the power of our neshama, the power of our soul, the Jewish soul specifically. And number two, the power of the Jewish nation when we all get together, when we are united. So these are amazing messages, and more so almost than almost any other parsha, I would think. But at any rate, we're not doing any other parsha. We're doing this week's parsha. So we have to talk about the value and the uniqueness of the parsha at the time that you're reading it. It's like saying, I had a wonderful dinner last year at an amazing restaurant. I know, but where are you going tonight? So that's what we're talking about. We always talk about how special the holiday of that we're currently celebrating and the parsha that we're currently reading. And that's, of course, understandable. So what is Chukas Balak talking about? Chukas starts, the word chukah, by the way, which is the name of the parsha, means a decree that is not logical. It's above logic. Do it because I said so. You may not understand it. As a matter of fact, you probably can't even understand it. But do it because I said so. That's what the word chukah means. And in the Torah, we find, in fact, three different categories of mitzvahs. The first category of mitzvahs, maybe not the first, but the one category of mitzvah is chukah. It's a mitzvah that is done just because Hashem commanded us. God is our king. God is our source of our life. God is a creator of everything. And Hashem tells us to do something. So how much more so if your parent tells you to do something or somebody you respect and you don't understand 100%, you do it just because. Every mother says the same thing to her children. Do it because I said so. I don't care if you don't understand. Do it because I said so. And Hashem tells us the same thing. Do it because I said so. Show that you love me. Show that you trust me. Show that you believe that what I'm asking you to do, you actually believe is to your benefit. You may not understand it, but one day you will. And when is that one day? When Mashiach comes, when the neshama goes up to Gan Eden, to paradise, we have a different view of things. So that's the underlying concept of every mitzvah. Even as I'm about to talk about the other two categories of mitzvahs, which are the rational mitzvahs. And those are mitzvahs that we would do even if we would, God forbid, not be Jews. Every civilized society has mitzvahs against theft, the mitzvahs against murder, against pillaging and rape and concern for your fellow and all kinds of, these are all rational. Every society has it. Ethical, so to speak, mitzvahs. That's the second category of mitzvahs, the category, and in Hebrew it's called mishpatim. Mishpatim means mitzvahs that are logical. And then there's a category of mitzvahs that are called edot or testimonial mitzvahs. And they are, again, logical once you know the background. So keeping Shabbat, keeping the holidays, these are testimonial mitzvahs. They are mitzvahs that we do in order to remember something in our history. Every nation has holidays that they celebrate, things that they do, customs that they have in order to remember their past and remember the history. And if once you know the background, it also becomes logical. This week's Torah portion is not, it doesn't start anyway with the mitzvah of mitzvahs that are rational, social mitzvahs, social justice mitzvahs. It doesn't start with mitzvahs that are testimonial, that talk about the history and remembering the past, remembering the traditions. Instead, it opens up with a mitzvah that's called a chok, a chukah, a mitzvah that is supra-rational, above logic. We don't say it doesn't have logic because Hashem has a logic for it. And in fact, the Gemara tells us, and the Zohar tells us that Moshe understood the logic for that mitzvah. And what is the mitzvah? The mitzvah is called the mitzvah of Parah Aduma, which means the red cow, the red heifer, the red cow. And the Torah tells us that if a person or an object comes in contact with a corpse, Jewish corpse, with a corpse, and or doesn't even come in contact, is under the same roof as a corpse, a dead body, that individual, human being, or that object, a bed, a table, a plate, a chair, any object, becomes tameh, impure, somehow less connected to spirituality and holiness. And the only way to regain your status of being tahor, which is roughly translated as pure or connected again, is to have a red cow that has no more than two black hairs, never did any work at all, not even a bird landed on its back and it carried it. You slaughter this cow. The cow is slaughtered like any other cow, but then is completely cremated and is mixed with, you take some of the ash, you mix it with some spring water, and you sprinkle it on the person 3 days after this incident happened with going to the cemetery or going to a funeral home or going to a hospital where a person died, or just plain being in a house where a person died, or being next to a corpse for some reason. You sprinkle on this individual or the object 3 days later and 7 days later, then the person immerses in a mikveh, and then you become pure, tahor. The logic is not there because there are components of this mitzvah that are defy logic. So the person that carries the ashes in order to this mixture of ash and water in order to have the other person sprinkled, that individual becomes tameh, becomes impure. The person that's being sprinkled, but has somehow a backwards effect. There's aspects that we don't understand. Even Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, the wisest of all men, said, I would like to understand, but I don't understand 100% what this means. We can understand aspects. When we study the mystical elements, we sort of hear what it is, but we still don't understand exactly. Moshe understood it, but we don't understand it. And it's called, therefore, a chok. So therefore, it starts, the parsha opens up with this concept that Hashem gives us mitzvahs that he wants us to do just because. And he doesn't want us to understand it, even if many other mitzvahs we do understand. So that is the initial thing. And the reason that you would do that is the same reason a mother would do that to a child. Why shouldn't the mother sit down every time you tell the kid, do this, and give a whole long explanation? Why not? Today, it actually becomes a style that there are some mothers that ask, my dear child, would you like me to diaper you? My dear child, would you like to go this? Would you like this? Would you like that? This isn't so much the old-fashioned style of parenting, but this is a question. Maybe you should be explaining everything. Now, it doesn't mean you explain nothing, because as I mentioned, there are many mitzvahs that Hashem does give us an explanation for, and that we do understand. So what is this concept of telling somebody to do something when you know ahead of time that that person doesn't understand it, but yet you want them to do it anyway? And of course, we understand, again, from the human side, why would you tell this to your child? Because you love them, because you believe that this is the very best thing for them to do, except that you also, at the same time, understand that they are not capable of processing why it's so special, why it's so important. Why should you look both ways before you cross the street? Why not just run across? Why should you put on a coat before you go outside if it's cold? You don't feel cold because you don't see what's going to happen the next day. You don't see what's going to happen in the big picture. There's something that this individual is not able of processing right now. And therefore, as the loving parent, matter of fact, if you wouldn't tell them and you would just rely on everything that your child understands, you really don't look, you're not looking out for their best, I'm going to say you don't love them, but you're not looking out for their best interest. You think you are, but you're really not, because that's our job. Our job as parents, our job as teachers is to sometimes give instructions that are not understood. And Hashem treats us the same way. And Hashem wants us to know that the mitzvahs at the end of the day are not there only for us to understand. They're all there, in the words of Rambam, they're all there in order to make us better people. Every mitzvah, they're all there in order to make us more spiritual. They're all there in order to make us have better lives at the end of the day by following the recipe of the Torah, by following the steps in the Torah. Every single mitzvah, even the mitzvahs that we cannot understand. But if we only do the mitzvahs that we understand, or even if we do all the mitzvahs, but just the limit of our understanding, we do them according to how far we can go, then we're missing out on that loving connection. That loving connection, meaning the connection that Hashem has to us, where we are, so to speak, blindly following instructions because we believe that God really does love us. If you believe, and this is something that they do in corporations, and they go on retreats, and they have these trust-building things, you blindfold the person, and you throw them, and the other person catches them. Do you believe that the other person, your team member, actually has your back? Do you believe that your team member has your best interest in heart, at heart? And we ask the same question to ourselves. Do we trust God? Do we trust Hashem? Does Hashem really care about us? So, you know, every child wants to know, my parents really love me. Maybe I'm adopted. They don't really care about me. So this is what it is. So Hashem gives us mitzvahs that are chukim, that are supra-rational, above logic, expressly for this purpose. The purpose is to build trust, to allow us to understand how much He truly loves us. And He's telling us stuff. And the question is, do we trust Hashem's love? That's the question. Do we really believe it internally? If we really, really believe it internally, as we're studying about in Tanya, the different levels of V'ahavta, Hashem Elokecha, it says in the Shema, love Hashem. Well, love Hashem means believe that Hashem loves you. It's not a one way, everybody understands this. You say a person, I love this individual, I love this boy, I love this girl, I love this, whatever it is. They don't know I exist, but I love them so much. You're delusional. You know, this is a problem. You know, I'm going to pattern my life around doing everything because I love it. Does that person know you exist? No, not really. Well, you know, maybe you should find somebody who actually knows something about you. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't do things that make you happy. But if that's how you're going to pattern your life, everybody understands it's a little bit delusional. There's no other way to say it. So when we say we're supposed to love Hashem, we have to at Hashem Elokecha, the flip side to that, or the relationship side to that, is Hashem loves us back. And in fact, this is what it says straight in the Chumash. It says, Ahavti eschem amar Hashem. Hashem says, I love you. So this is a love relationship. In a love relationship, somebody tells you to do something because it makes me happy, do something because I'd like you to do it, you run to do it, of course. So that's how the Parsha opens up. The Parsha opens up with this concept of chukah, of relationship that we have with Hashem that is above logic. Our relationship with God is not based on logic. The non-Jewish world is not given any chukim to do. The non-Jewish world is given mitzvahs, the seven Noahide laws. Each one of those laws that were given to Adam, and then this seventh law was added to Noah, not to be cruel to animals, specifically not to eat an animal while it's still alive, kill the animal first, and in general, not to be cruel to animals was given to Noah. That, the non-Jewish world, every one of their mitzvahs is logical. Believe that you have a creator. Don't murder. Don't steal. Don't commit sexual offenses. Make sure that there is a justice system in place. You know, don't be cruel to animals. Don't curse God, etc. All of these, don't worship idols. All of these mitzvahs are rational. Understand that you have a creator. Understand that you're not here. That there's a big picture. That we're not living in a jungle that has no rhyme or reason. We're living in an orderly place. That nature is not just self-perpetuating. There's a God. So this is rational. You can understand this. Every nation, therefore, comes to certain religious practices. They don't all follow the Jewish tradition of the seven Noahide laws. They invent their own religions, which is a problem according to Judaism. But at any rate, all the mitzvahs that we believe Hashem gave to the nations of the world are rational. Hashem specifically gave us mitzvahs that are above rational understanding, above logic. Specifically, the mitzvah that we talk about is how to purify yourself from impurity of death. So essentially what the Torah is teaching us is that when a person is confronted with the ultimate problem, which is death, meaning a cessation, a complete ending, and you say you think it's a dead end, Hashem says it's not a dead end. There is a solution around it. You have a neshama, you have a soul, and because you have a neshama, you have to worry about your neshama, and your neshama, in fact, lives forever. Your soul, in fact, is absolutely without limit because it's a piece of energy. It's a piece of Hashem's energy. And therefore, you have to do certain things to reestablish that connection. So for a moment, you think that you don't have the connection. Hashem says, I'm going to teach you how to make the connection. And the Chassidus and the Zohar and the mystical teachings explain the steps of this Parah Aduma process, of this red heifer process. And even Rashi, which is on the literal level, explains to us that the idea is to take the materialistic drive, which is the, symbolized by the red cow, and to totally cremate it, to return back to your senses. So a person feels that they have an emptiness in their life, and they feel that they don't have life and meaning, excitement, enthusiasm about spiritual things. So the first thing to do is burn away all of the materialistic desires, meaning come back to basics. Go back to basics. What is basic? Basics is the cremated ash. You take the entire big cow, used to be a big cow, and you make it a small pile of ash, and then combine it with the water of spring water, which is living waters. Water is connected to its source. Has to be a spring water. Waters from a spring, living waters. And then sprinkle it on the person with a little bit of grass. Grass is something that people step on. It's something that symbolizes humility. So the idea is, our sages teach us, that when a person is confronted with a sense of futility in their life, what am I doing? Where am I going? I feel like I'm at a dead end. I feel like this. It's usually because, and if you examine it deeply, you'll see it's always because the person doesn't understand their place in the world. So there's a famous story that the Chassidim tell about the Tzemach Tzedek, third Lubavitcher Rebbe. Person came to the Tzemach Tzedek and said, Rebbe, you have to give me some advice. Rebbe says, what's the matter? Says, in my town, whenever I go to shul, people belittle me. They give me no respect. If I sit in this chair, they say it's somebody else's chair. If I want to do this, if I want to daven be the chazan, if I want to do, they give me no, wherever, in the expression he used was, wherever I go, they step on me. Rebbe, please help me. So the Rebbe looked at him and he said, if wherever you go, you're being stepped on, it means you're spreading yourself all over the place. So who asked you to spread all over the place? Why are you spreading all over the place? That wherever somebody should step, they should step on you. Rebbe understood that this was a person who needed a lesson in humility. Everything somebody said, they thought they were going against. So sometimes that's our problem. And when we become overly conscious about our own respect, our own sense of self-worth, it's a good thing to have a sense of self-worth. But if we are overly promoting ourselves and our sense of self-worth in our mind, then everything is a problem. Then we feel that everything we're doing, we don't have any joy in what we're doing because I should be doing something else. A person like me, I should be this, I should be that. Maybe not. Maybe what you're doing is the very best thing for you. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't have ambition and change courses sometimes if it really is like that. But for that, you need to consult with somebody else and get an outside opinion. So anyway, that's one of the beautiful thoughts about the Parah Aduma. It doesn't, again, this is not the total logic. A person could say, I'm a tzaddik, I'm a completely righteous Jew, I do everything right, why do I need this Parah Aduma process? The answer is, Hashem said so. So that's the first part of our Parsha, where we talk about the Parah Aduma, the red heifer, and we talk about the love that Hashem has for us by specifically giving us things that we shouldn't understand. And the only reason to do it is because we love Hashem and Hashem loves us. That's it. Because if it's based on logic, then you don't need Hashem to tell you to do it. Then you do it for yourself. So that's the underlying theme and the underlying motivation for every mitzvah. But in certain categories, in certain mitzvahs, it actually comes out. Another famous example that is more applicable to our daily life is keeping kosher. Keeping kosher is one of the chukim, keeping the laws of what to eat and what not to eat, even if everything is 100% healthy, and even if everything is under fine and wonderful, keeping the kosher laws is called a chok. It is above logic. It doesn't make sense why this animal should be kosher, that should be not. And specifically, if you have a kosher animal, a chicken, a cow, something that's kosher, and it was slaughtered by a rabbi, but the knife had a nick, or it wasn't slaughtered by a rabbi, it was slaughtered by somebody else who uses the same knife, but a non-Jewish person slaughtered the same knife, same process, the animal's not kosher, let alone if it wasn't slaughtered properly. It doesn't make any sense. And that is an example in our daily life, a big example of what is called a chok. So we move on to in the parsha, and we move on to let's move on to the next parsha, the parsha of Balak, and we talk about the king whose name is Balak. It's the name of a person. He's the king of a nation called Moab. And this king Balak hires a person who is a prophet, a non-Jewish guy, who is a very bad person. But Hashem gave this individual the capacity to be a prophet, to understand the spiritual workings, just to show the nations of the world that they also have an opportunity to attach to spirituality if they want to use it properly. So it's like giving a whole credit line to somebody just to prove that you care about them, but you know that unfortunately they're a drug addict. And what are they going to do with the money? Is buy drugs or something else that's an addictive, something bad for them. Why do you do it? Because you want to show, maybe it's your kid, maybe it's your friend, maybe it's somebody else. You want to show them that you're giving them opportunity. Hashem gave the nations of the world this prophet, and this prophet, Bilam, had an incredible, incredible insight into the spiritual workings of the world. Matter of fact, the Torah tells us that Bilam knew when Hashem sits in judgment and what to say exactly in that moment to make somebody get zapped by the heavenly court. He knew exactly how the spiritual energies work. He understood everything about the mystical world on a very, very, very high level. And he misused that knowledge. And what happens is that this king, Balak, hires this guy, Bilam, to curse the Jewish people. Not because the Jews are about to attack him, but only because he's an anti-Semite. He hated the Jews. And we specifically told him, we're not coming to take your land. We're going to the land of Israel. You're not in Israel. You're outside of Israel. He hated the Jews. And he hired Bilam, who hated the Jews even more. According to the Midrash, Bilam was the one who initially gave the plans to Pharaoh, to Paro, to enslave the Jewish people way back in Egypt. So he was an old guy by this time because the slavery had been at roughly 118 years before. This is more than that is 116 years of slavery, plus now 40 years in the desert. So he was an old guy, Bilam. And he was an advisor to Paro at that time, according to the Medrash. So he was, 150 years old, whatever he was at the time, more than that. Old guy. Eventually, we're going to read that Moshe kills Bilam in battle. Before Moshe passes away, this is going to be a couple of weeks from now in the Parsha and Torah, this Bilam is going to be killed in battle by Moshe. None of the Moshe. But we'll talk about the Bilam. So the story is that Balak hires this guy, Bilam. And he tells Bilam, curse the Jews for me, because I know that when you curse people, your curses actually work. Bilam tries to curse the Jews several times. And eventually he realizes that every time he opens his mouth, and Hashem actually had told him this, you're not going to curse the Jews. They are blessed. Every time he opens his mouth to say curses, blessings come out. How wonderful you are. How amazing you are. You're an amazing nation. I wish I could be like you. He says the most amazing, incredible things. And eventually he says, that's it. I'm going to give up cursing the Jews. I'm only going to say blessings. He realizes that this is the end of the line for him. He's about to lose his spirit of prophecy. He's misused it completely, and he eventually, at the end of the parsha, tells the Jews, you will have Mashiach come. And this is the place in the Chumash where it is the most overt, the most open story about Mashiach coming. This week's Torah portion of Balaam. And Bilam tells the Jewish people that you will have a king who is going to be ruling over you and ruling over the entire nation, all the nations of the world. He will bring justice to the world. He will bring peace to the world. And that is the highlight, therefore, of the Parsha. And the Parsha concludes with this on this note. So what do we have? Parsha opens up, this double-headed Parsha, with Hashem's love for us, the concept of chukim, the relationship that we have that is above logic with our Creator. And it concludes with the promise for Mashiach to come and the fact that the Torah promises us that the Jewish nation is going to be elevated above all the other nations of the world, not for bad, not to rule the people, to misuse the people. On the contrary, to be the spiritual guides, the spiritual leaders. The rest of the world, in the language of Bilam, will bring gifts, will gather around the Jews, will elevate the Jews, because they will realize that this is the source of their benefit, to benefit the Jewish nation, benefits the nations of the world. And in fact, Hashem had previously told this to Abraham. Way back in Parshas Lech Lecha, Hashem told Abraham, beginning of the Torah, that those who bless you will be blessed. And there are goyim today, there are non-Jews today who actually believe in the Bible, and they believe this. They believe that if they bless a Jew, they will be blessed. And Bilam reinforces this concept when he talks about Mashiach coming. Mashiach is not something for us to be superior and stepping on people. Contrary, Mashiach is a mechanism for the Jews to be so spiritually elevated that we then become spiritual guides and sources of conduits of divine blessing, divine energy for the rest of the world. So this is a very special parsha. And as I mentioned earlier, it goes into the day is the 12th of Tammuz, which is day of liberation of the previous Rebbe. We call in Yiddish the Friedeke Rebbe, the previous Rebbe. And it is a day of a lot of energy. So I wish you a Shabbat Shalom, and we should have a lot of energy ourselves. We should appreciate how special we are. We should appreciate how special we are individually and how amazing we are when we get together. And this is one of the things that Bilam actually said in his blessings to the Jews, which he intended to be a curse, but were turned out when he opened his mouth and said to be blessings. He said, how wonderful you are when you gather together. He says, Matovu Olech Yaakov, Mishkan Asach Yisrael, how wonderful you Jewish people are, how you look out for each other. He commented on the way that we are so careful of somebody else's feelings, that the way the tents were set up in the desert, the tents, the doors to the tents weren't facing each other, so that everybody should have their own privacy and everybody should have their own sense of space. And this is my space, even though we're all together in the desert, like one big bungalow colony. But this, we all looked out for each other. And that's what he was so impressed about, the way the Jews, he said, I wish my nation could be like you. And in fact, if you talk about a lot of the anti-Semites, that's what they're so jealous of the Jewish people, even till today, even the anti-Semites who actually say they hate Jews, those Jews, they're all looking out for each other first. They're all this, they're all that. They make an ambulance service. They treat the Jews first. They make this, the Jews is. That's what we should be proud of, actually, that we are actually, we have this relationship, a Jew on the other side of the world. We never met the person. We don't know who they're coming from. We don't know who they are, but you hear a Jew needs something, Jews rush to help. And this is amazing, amazing quality. And this is, in fact, what our Gemara tells us will, in fact, bring Mashiach, this quality of looking out for each other. So Shabbat Shalom.